And I'm William Cooper.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, my dear.
You're welcome.
I'll come and tuck you in just a little bit.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
The Hour of the Time may be contacted at HOTT, that's H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, in the state of Arizona, 85925. Our phone number is 928-333-2942, and our website is www.hourofthetime.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we know that great change is in the works. We can see it all around us. We have studied, we have researched, we have uncovered and exposed probably the greatest conspiracy in the history of the world, or at least it began as a conspiracy. Nothing is hidden anymore. But by the strict legal definition, it can be called a conspiracy. Through the use of common sense and study, however, everything is out in the open. Nothing is hidden. The people who are bringing about this change in the world are so arrogant, so convinced that we, the ordinary man and woman, are so stupid, so ignorant, and so concerned with our day-to-day life and earning a living and sucking up some suds after work down at the local tavern, or just in front of your television, rotting your brain, that they don't bother to hide anything anymore. They are absolutely convinced that it has gone so far that nothing can stop it. And the more time that passes, you can see their arrogance increase. Their contempt for the rest of us grows beyond any normal bound. We know that they want to create one world. One world. Where there will be no more sovereign nation states, nor sovereign people. They want to disarm every person and every country. They want to create a system of regions under a world totalitarian socialist government. They want to, quote, enslave the masses, end quote, or at least bind them so that they will never again represent a threat to the ruling class. We know from their own writings and speeches and documents that they want to cull the population of the world and bring it down to a much more manageable level. We also know that religion has been a big thorn in their side since the beginning. And they want to do away with all existing religions save theirs. But what is theirs? What is this religion of theirs that we're going to be forced to join or suffer dire consequences if we choose not to? That everyone will be given a choice. If we study the United Nations, ladies and gentlemen, we can see that there is only one religion that has ever been recognized in the history of that organization. And that religion is the Baha'i faith, or Baha'ism, as some call it. Tonight I'm going to take you on a tour of the Baha'i faith and give you a peek into what has to be a merging of all of the mystery religions into a accepted body of teachings and beliefs that these manipulators believe will allow all the people in the world to live together without any conflict. And as I go through this, I think you'll begin to understand why. There is no concept of freedom in the New World Order. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, that you will be presented with a strict set of rules on how you will live your life. You will have to have permission to have children. The children will be reared by the state, not by the family. You will only probably be forced to work 4 hours a day and be pleasantly entertained with Super Bowls and great sporting contests and fantastic exhibitions and motion pictures and holographic presentations and theatrical works. Great art exhibitions, designer drugs, parties. And as you have already noticed on television, gladiators are coming back. Although in its present form, blood has not been spilled as of yet. However, it is extremely popular with the less intelligent of what they call the masses. Watch it flower and bloom until one day you will watch two combatants upon a field in front of tens of thousands of people battle to the death once again and they may be those who choose not to follow the New World religion. A person who really wants to know what's coming in the New World Order will be an avid student of the old Roman Empire. You will be amazed at the similarities and even the exact duplicity of the politics, the lies, the manipulation of the people and of the Republic, and the same ruses that were used in Julius Caesar's day to destroy the Republic and create a dictatorship ruled by an emperor who ultimately became God, are being played out on the world stage today. The exact scenario. You will even see the exact symbols in use. The next time you're watching C-SPAN, look on each side of the podium where the speaker sits. You will see the fascia. And you see the eagle. And if you look upon the lodges of the Scottish Rite temples, you will see the double-headed eagle. It's all there. It's all the same religion, the same politics, the same lies, the same manipulations, the same controls, the same power struggles, the same greed, the same desire, the same frantic temptations to rule the world by the same people descended from the exact same families. Doubt it not. Dr. E. Stanley Jones wrote, "There is a snag in the statement of the Theosophists and the Baha'is that all religions are basically one and the same and are equally good, therefore join the Theosophical Society or the Baha'is on that basis. But if they are all the same, why another? It would indeed seem superfluous, yet Baha'is report a much stronger response from the public during recent years than ever before." And maybe Ferguson was right when he stated that no cult bears a gospel better suited to the temper of our times than the Baha'i. You will soon discover why. You see, this movement, which after all claims only something over 1 million adherents in nearly every country of the world, is worth studying. For among those 1 million adherents, and I sincerely, ladies and gentlemen, believe that it is way beyond that number, are the great families that control the financial systems, economies, banks, the families that rule the nations of the world. Dr. Atkins was right in observing that there is among all the cults nothing more curious than that the old controversy as to the true successor of Muhammad, the prophet, should at last have issued in a universal religion with a temple of unity on the shores of Lake Michigan. You see, Baha'ism is of Persian Mohammedan origin. It traces its beginning to the Mohammedan belief that the last true successor of Muhammad, who disappeared in the 10th century, never died, but is still living in a mysterious city surrounded by a band of faithful disciples, and that at the end of time he will issue forth and fill the earth with justice after it has been filled with iniquity. And this hidden successor, ladies and gentlemen, is said to have revealed himself from time to time through those to whom he has made known his will and who are known as Babs. Our gates, the gate, that is, whereby communication was reopened between the Hidden One and his faithful followers. The last one of these Babs was a young Persian merchant named Mirza Ali Muhammad, who took the title of Bab in 1844, and who had much the same relation to Baha'u'llah as John the Baptist had to Christ. You see, the Bab's career was short-lived. He died a martyr's death at the hand of Persian Mohammedans at the age of 30 years in the year 1850. He had constantly pointed to a divine prophet who was shortly to succeed him, the same old promise of a Messiah that has existed for a millennium. And before his death, he sent his signet rings and writings to one of his friends and foremost supporters, one Mirza Hussein Ali, his senior by only 2 years. The two had never met and were certainly not related. Ali at first continued the teachings of the Bab, but soon afterwards announced himself as the divine manifestation predicted by him. An opportunist, you might say. He is known as Baha'u'llah, that is, translated, glory to God. The followers of this organization then changed their name from Babs to Baha'is and proceeded to ascribe to Baha'u'llah divine honor and worship. Like the Bab, Baha'u'llah and his disciples suffered much from persecution and exile, which of course only proved once more that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. Baha'u'llah passed away in May of 1892 at the age of 75. After 40 years of hardship, imprisonment, and exile in his villa of Beje near Acre in Palestine, also known as the Holy Land, he was succeeded by his son, Abbas Effendi, born in Tehran, Persia, on May 23rd in 1844. Coincidentally, on the very day upon which the Bab made his declaration to the disciples in Shiraz, Abbas, who had shared his father's hardships as well as his greater ease in his declining years, is known among the Baha'is as Abdul Baha, in effect, translated, the servant of God. He became the authoritative interpreter of the teachings of the Master, Baha'u'llah. He too became the victim of persecution and has known adversities and persecutions, although not as severe or numerous as his predecessors in the cause. In 1912, he actually visited the United States, where the first disciples were won in Chicago, and where the cause has since grown more rapidly than in any other country except Persia. Abdul Baha died on November the 28th, 1921. Aged 77 years. The leadership of the movement, after some wranglings, fell to his eldest grandson, Shoghi Effendi, the head of a committee of 19, and known by the title of Guardian of the Cause. Baha'ism is the unifying cult par excellence. If there is any such thing as a cult, this certainly fits the current definition. It has, in the words of one Mrs. Chandler, accepted all the religions of the world, found them fundamentally and essentially alike, and reveres equally as divine all nine of the prophets. So it may appeal equally to Hindus, Muslims, Christians, and Jews. It admits the divinity of the prophet of Messiah, of each. It does not even claim any greater divinity for its own particular prophet, Baha'u'llah. It merely claims that the great beauty of blessed perfection, coming later, has brought the latest message from the divine source to the peoples of the world, and that the message doesn't differ fundamentally or in essence from the message of his predecessor, but is, you might say, brought up to date in dealing with certain specific matters that did not concern the people whom Christ or Muhammad addressed.
When you rush around in hopeless circles, searching everywhere for something true, you're at the age of not believing, when all the make-believe is true. When you set aside your childhood heroes, and your dreams are lost upon a shelf, you're at the age of not believing, and worst of all, you doubt yourself. You're a castaway where no one hears you, on a barren isle in a lonely sea. Where did all the happy endings go? Where can all the good times be? You must face the age of not believing, doubting everything you ever knew, until at last you start believing there's something wonderful in you.
In the words of another Baha'i writer, Jesus could not speak of international problems. His people did not know of the existence of Japan. A new revelation for our modern day must therefore complete that brought by Jesus. When Jesus warned to watch and pray for the coming of the Lord, he meant receive Baha'u'llah. This prophet therefore referred to Jesus as the Son of God, or a manifestation of God, but claimed to be himself a later manifestation. In accordance with these fundamental ideas, and to attain to their unifying ideal, Baha'is present the following principles for which they strive. Listen very carefully. The oneness of God and oneness of religion. The oneness of mankind. Independent search after truth. All prejudices must be abandoned, to wit, religious, color, national, class, sexual, and personal prejudices. International peace. International auxiliary language. An education for all. Equality for the sexes. Abolition of industrial slavery, which is abolition of wealth and poverty, which translates to communistic. Personal holiness, work in the spirit of service, is worship. Oh boy. Now some of these sound really good, and some of them really are, ladies and gentlemen. Others are manipulations, and terrible manipulations at that. Baha'ism claims that unity and brotherhood are the only important things and not doctrine. You see, this faith comes out of the mysteries of the brotherhood of the Illuminati. And it is built around this word, brotherhood. Love is the ever-recurring word in its literature. But those who practice this religion demonstrate over and over again that that word love means little, if anything at all. You see, its conception of love is neither correct nor consistently carried out. In the first place, Baha'ism itself proves that love, without certain definite teachings, is untenable. When in New York in 1912, Abdu'l-Bahá was approached by two Baha'is who, arguing a point of Baha'i teachings, asked him to decide who was right. The answer of Abdu'l-Bahá was, neither is right. To be a Baha'i, there must never be any discord. All must agree. Unity is the aim. And yet this same system now insists that nothing whatever should be given to the public by any individual among the friends unless fully considered and approved by the spiritual assembly in his locality. The implication of this, of course, is that it is not safe to let individuals air their views on Baha'i teaching except after official approval of their views. The Star of the West is the official organ of the movement in America. And in the next place, in case a member of the Baha'is leaves the movement because of changed views, he, or generally she, for this is a ladies' cult, like Christian Science, has good reason to hide as far as possible out of reach of the leaders of this loving cult. Now, you can never find anything written that will back up that statement, ladies and gentlemen. But anyone who has been a victim of the aftermath of their public disagreement with the tenets of the Baha'i faith will tell you very quickly, without hesitation, and with great fear, that it is true. You see, there is no salvation for apostate Baha'is according to the system, just as there is no salvation for apostate Mormons according to their system, just as there is no salvation for apostate Freemasons according to their system, or for apostate Rosicrucii members according to their system. You would think that the frightfully outlandish names in use among Baha'is tend to make the movement unpopular. But the Baha'is, however, do not shrink from pointing to their great temple as Mashrigul Adkar. And with this temple, they conjure. It has cost more money and time to complete this temple than seems to have been originally expected, and the dream of building similar structures in every state of the Union has, for the time being, at least, not materialized. Oh, they have built structures and temples here and there, but not in every state of the Union. The temple at Wilmette near Chicago embodies invisible form many of the ideals of this organization and is its chief means of propaganda. In an illustrated pamphlet on the Baha'i's House of Worship, an institution of the World Order of Baha'u'llah, Genevieve L. Coy informs us that as musicians, artists, and poets receive their inspiration from another realm, so the late Louis Bourgeois, architect of this temple, through all his years of labor, was ever conscious that the Baha'u'llah was the creator of this building to be erected to his glory. And when the man-made creeds are stripped away from all the religions, we find nothing left but harmony. But today, religion, ladies and gentlemen, is so entangled in the superstitions and hypotheses of men that it must needs be stated in a new form to be once again pure and undefiled according to the Baha'is, and according to the Baha'is, that is exactly what they and no one else are doing. And likewise, in architecture, those fundamental structural lines which originated in the faith of all religions are the same, but so covered over are they with the decorations picturing creed upon creed and superstition upon superstition that the Baha'is need lay them aside and create a new form or ornamentation. So into this new design, the design of the temple is woven in symbolic form, the great Baha'i teaching of unity. Which symbology? Why, the symbology that I've been teaching you for the last 4.5 years, the symbology of the ancient mystery religion of Babylon. The great Baha'i teaching outwardly to the profane is that of unity, the unity of all religions and of all mankind. There are combinations of mathematical lines symbolizing those of the universe, and in their and see if it doesn't sound a little familiar to you. The unity of all religions and of all mankind, combinations of mathematical lines which symbolize those of the universe, and in the intricate merging of circle into circle, of circle within circle, we visualize the merging of all of the different religions into one. So I'm not going to belabor this and make you weary of listening to a detailed account of the cost that was spent. But when the Mashriquil Adkar at Wilmet was completed, it was supposed to include a hospital and dispensary, a school for orphan children, a hospice, and a college for higher scientific education. In these institutions, the principle of the oneness of mankind was to have been put into concrete practice. The services were to be dispensed, irrespective of color, race, or nationality. The scientific college, we are told, was included because religion and science are the two wings upon which man's intelligence can soar into the heights with which the human soul can progress, whatever that means. You see, there are 9 entrances into the Nanagon Temple. That's their term. I have no idea what Nanagon means. Each one of these entrances represents one of 9 great religions, and all together, leading into the inner sanctuary of truth from the headquarters of the National Spiritual Assembly of Baha'is, is the United States and Canada. We are also informed that when the interior decoration is completed, the central hall of the Wilmet Temple will be open for daily prayer and meditation and for meetings consisting only of reading from the words of Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha. In all of these mystery schools, you will find the object of central concern is the completion of a temple. The work on the Baha'i's great temple proceeded for many years very, very slowly. In a letter dated February the 21st, 1942, Mr. Horace Haley, Secretary of the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of Wilmet, Illinois, informed, "Since the pamphlet by Guinevere L. Coy was published, the work of external decoration has been carried forward to a point very near completion. The enclosed photograph, taken December 18th, shows the progress on the main story, which is now nearly completed, except for 2 of the 9 sides. We hope that this work can be done before the fall of 1942. And it wasn't. And at the same time, construct the circular steps which are to surround the building. When this construction work is finished, the exterior of the building will be complete, but the work of the interior is still to be done. We do not plan any immediate work on the interior, but assume that after a few years, a definite scheme of interior decoration and arrangement will be undertaken.
Now compare this slow financial sacrifice for the movement's chief enterprise, the remark of W.M. Miller. It is startling to read in the census statistics as given by the Baha'is of America that whereas the property of the Baha'i Temple in Chicago is worth more than $1 million, the amount given in 1936 by the members of the cause to charity was only $281. Same thing happens with the Freemasons, who claim that they are a benevolent organization existing for the good of the community, and they collect millions and millions of dollars every year. Every research into what is done with those dollars reveals that less, ladies and gentlemen, less than 3% is ever spent on good works. So even if this figure of the Baha'is is correct, according to W.M. Miller, even if it is incorrect, wouldn't it be wonderful if they would show their love more in deed than in word, he says. If they would win our confidence, how much more convincing a great medical mission in India or Tibet than a million-dollar temple in Chicago, beautiful as the Masrig-ul-Azkar may be. W.M. Miller was a thinking man. The Baha'i Centenary, 1844 to 1944, published in 1944 by the Baha'i Publishing Company, Wilmette, Illinois, states that the superstructure was finished in 1931 and the exterior ornamentation was completed between 1932 and 1943. From the same source, we learn that four Baha'i schools have been established in the United States, some of which, judging from the photographs, are quite elaborate. Of the temple, this source states, records of daily visitors kept since July 1st, 1932, show that the total number who went through the building with Baha'i guides up to October 1st, 1943, was 164,360. To deal with that throng of inquirers, a body of temple guides has been rendering service. Its members prepared by special course of instructions based upon long experience with the types of questions asked and the information desired, and it seems that the Mormons have learned something from this because they have instituted the exact same system. Now, it's evident to me, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know about you, that a movement which so strongly stresses the unity of all religious forces in the world should be somewhat vague and general. For if they state anything exactly, then they are no longer unifying, are they? So there are not many points of Christian doctrine upon which this organization teaches. It rather ignores them one and all. Perhaps that's exactly where we should start in your basic education as to the tenets of Baha'ism. By now it should be clear that Baha'ism has some very fine points, which I read to you, which from the Christian standpoint make it all the more dangerous as a religion. The last three words that I gave you were stressed for a purpose. Who would not praise it in the Baha'is when they advocate world peace? Who would not praise any organization or any person when they advocate world peace? Who, listening, has not grasped by this time the terribleness of a universal war fought with modern weapons of wholesale destruction along the lines of World War II, which literally encompassed the globe? Which would be fought not in our interest, ladies and gentlemen, but in the interest of international investments of large capital. Rich people make money from wars, no matter who wins or loses. Who among you does not realize that modern warfare comes as close to hell as anything on earth can well come? Or who does not realize that it is more than a noble gesture for someone who has been a lifelong member of the Ku Klux Klan to lay a sick black child in the bed next to his own in the same ward and then tend to both with equal tenderness? Do you think that it could ever happen? Do you think that it ever would? Because that's what they're talking about here. You see, there are great gifts of what Calvin called God's common grace, but all such nobility of character does not atone for sin, ladies and gentlemen. It is not religion. Least of all, is it a religion superior to Christianity, or to any other religion for that matter. It is a religion which vacillates and accepts basically the tenets, the main tenets of all, in order to be accepted by all, and their dream is that all will merge as one in Baha'i. You see, Baha'ism is plainly implied pantheism. Baha'ism is one more example of what Dr. Abraham Kuyper called many years ago the irresistible tendency in our age to change along every line the God-man into the man-God. As pantheism, Baha'ism stands condemned from the standpoint of Christianity, not man's reaching up to ever higher manifestations of the divine, but the transcendent God descending to man in divine revelation is the way out of human ills. You want to cause trouble upon this earth, you make man God and you will see more trouble than you ever dreamed of in your wildest fantasies or that you can read about in the most terrible history that has ever occurred in this world. You see, if man is God, he doesn't have to answer for anything. If man is God, he does not have to explain away his desires and temptations. If man is God, then he cannot sin by stealing what is yours, raping your wife, your daughter. Or murdering as many as he wishes. Without something higher than man, which man must answer to, there can be no morals. There can be no ethics. There can be no responsibility. That's the danger with all of this. Look around you. Who sitting around you would you trust to be God? Would you trust me to be God? By golly, I wouldn't. I know me too well. My teaching has always been not to place anyone upon a pedestal, not to follow blindly, not to trust anyone that you send to a public office, to listen to everyone, read everything, believe nothing unless you can prove it in your own research. You see, Baha'ism has much in common with theosophy. It grew literally out of the mystery religions, which is theosophy. And both emphasize the idea that one more divine spokesman must add to Jesus' words. But whereas theosophists are looking for this man to appear since Krishnamurti stepped down from the throne that was Christ's, in their words, Baha'is assert that this man has appeared already in Baha'u'llah. With theosophists, the Baha'is also agree that all religions are one. We remember Annie Besant's words, blended together they give the whiteness of truth, blended together they give a mighty cord of perfection. And this is due, of course, to their common pantheism. Baha'ism, ladies and gentlemen, has much in common with Spiritism and Freemasonry, for literally, at the highest levels, they are the same. At the highest levels, they are the same with the Mormon Church and many others. And I am only stating fact here, not condemning any of it. Of Spiritism, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle wrote, "To me, it is religion, the very essence of it." He called it the great unifying force, the one probable thing connected with every religion, Christian or non-Christian, forming the common solid basis upon which each raises, if it must needs raise, that separate system which appeals to the varied types of mind. Well, that sounds exactly like Baha'ism, doesn't it? It does to me. The discussion of Freemasonry that we've had over the last 4.5 years on this broadcast reveals that this is the same. Same old teaching, sort of twisted just a little bit to make it a little more likable and without an awful lot of the symbolism and the esoteric language which tends to scare people away. They're frightened by the unknown. To a great many Freemasons, the Lodge is the badge of sociability, mutual helpfulness, and especially in the Blue Lodge, where they know nothing of the truth of the higher degrees. And they actually laugh at the idea that the Masonic Lodge or the Independent Order of Odd Fellows or the Rosicrucii should be considered a competitor, let alone a substitute for the Christian religion. But indeed, in fact, it is. And nevertheless, many leaders of the Masonic movement, the officially recommended literature of the movement, its signs and emblems, which are all borrowed from Oriental pagan religions, all these and other things show Freemasonry to be such that one Dr. Torrey was right when he said, "A man can be a Christian and a Freemason, but he cannot be an intelligent Christian and an intelligent Freemason at the same time, for he's worshiping upon two altars. These altars to two different gods, and he knows it not." So without wanting to give offense, therefore, to Christian Masons, and I'm being exceptionally polite tonight because normally I'm not, I would ask of them to study such works as an Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, which is in all the lodges, but seems to never be opened, and its kindred sciences. The specific volume that I'm talking about, or set of volumes, was published in 1914. A Lexicon of Freemasonry, Masonic Ritualist, all by Albert G. Mackey, M.D., 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite. Freemasonry and the Ancient Gods by J.S.M. Ward, published in 1926. The New Odd Fellows Manual by Reverend A.B. Grosch, published in 1882. And I would ask Freemasons to consider why there is a co-Masonic order in the Theosophical Society. I would ask why the assertion that all religions are one should be tolerated in Freemasonry but condemned in Theosophy and Baha'ism. Baha'u'llah, in his last will and testament, said this, ladies and gentlemen, "O ye people of the world, the religion of God is for the sake of love and union. Make it not the cause of enmity and conflict. The hope is cherished that the people of Baha shall ever turn to the blessed word. Lo, all are of God." Now what's wrong with that? Absolutely nothing, ladies and gentlemen. It is something that any one of us, if we could put the words together, would say. The Supreme Council of the 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry Southern Jurisdiction said this of the United States in 1874, quote, Freemasonry is a worship, but one in which all civilized men can unite, for it does not undertake to explain or dogmatically to settle those great mysteries that are above the feeble comprehension of our human intellect, end quote. You see, you thought I was joking when I said that they're the same. Exactly the same. Teaching exactly the same. Bringing about the same end result. And Mackey wrote, one of the great writers of Freemasonry, and I quote, if Freemasonry were simply a Christian institution, the Jew and the Muslim, the Brahmin and the Buddhist could not conscientiously partake of its illumination, but its universality is its boast. In its language, citizens of every nation may converse. At its altar, men of all religions may kneel. To its creed, disciples of every faith may subscribe, end quote. So all you Masons out there who have been claiming that you are really a Christian brotherhood, you are lying to yourself, you are lying to your friends, to your families, and you're lying to me, and I don't let you get away with it, whereas all the rest of them might. Stop lying. Stop deceiving, stop manipulating. If everybody would stop doing those things and start telling the truth, we could very quickly sort out where we're at in this world and where we're going and where we really want to be, and then we might actually be able to get there. Anyone who has to lie to make anyone else follow them is teaching a lie and following a lie and building a lie. Baha'is claim for their religion, a later emphasis upon the very same truth, they say, taught also among others by Christianity. We maintain, they say, that it is, at least in its manifestation in Christian hands or lands, a sad imitation of the Christian religion. But it's not even close to an imitation of the Christian religion at all. And anyone who could confuse it for such doesn't know anything about Christianity. And you could not possibly confuse it for the Buddhist religion. Or the Islamic religion. Or any of the Eastern religions, such as the Hindu religion, for it does not even come close to them either, although it accepts and promotes parts of all of them. They believe the Baha'u'llah as the final manifestation of God in the flesh is an imitation of the incarnation as seen in Jesus Christ, and in fact is the same spirit. Baha'i-inspired tablets that we consider fake are their spiritual baptism, Holy Land, Beatitudes, Unity Feast for the Lord's Supper, their imitation Pentecost, a surpassing peace is said to fill the souls of those who repeat 95 times daily the words Allah Ha Abha. These would be Christian touches apparently calculated to catch Christians, and it does not increase anyone's respect for Baha'ism, but it does actually occasionally catch somebody. That's a fact. Editorially, the Christian Century of September 25, 1946 tells us that the Baha'is decided to begin to advertise their cause in a twofold manner. For the rank and file through Newsweek and similar periodicals, while others were reached through trade journals of the publishing and broadcasting industries. And that's interesting. First, because we're now prepared to look for a more open method of propaganda, for you can begin to see their teachings increase and their advertising reach out even more as the New World Order struggles to be born. They teach the unity of any and all religions. Secondly, however, we can get a glimpse of the mentality of modernism when we see, ladies and gentlemen, their Journal of Religion go so far in their vehement antagonism against denominationalism and state that the plan is all right. The Baha'is have something to sell. It is interesting and may be helpfully suggestive to other religious bodies to see how this worthy group, which had its origins among the Mohammedans of Persia about a century ago, makes use of the most modern techniques for making friends and influencing people. We'll continue this on Monday night. If you don't think it's worthwhile, turn off your radio and go to bed. I think it's worthwhile because it is, after all, the only approved religion of the United Nations, and that makes it extremely important. Good night, ladies and gentlemen, and God bless you all.
The Hour of the Time may be contacted at HOTT, that's H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, in the state of Arizona, 85925. Our phone number is 928-333-2942, and our website is www.hourofthetime.com.
Take steps in and sees you through.